miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
And the show brought to you by YouBeauty.com and morning and night multivitamins. Time now for What's Toxic and What's Not. Our favorite toxicologist, Dr. Gary Ginsberg. Glad you're here again today, my friend. Glad you're here.
Oh, yeah. It's always good to survive the heat wave and the onslaught of ozone and still be able to talk about it.
Well, that's a topic today. It's hot weather, hot summer weather, and the emergency room. Evidently, they don't go together. What are the details?
Well, the ER emergency departments at hospitals, especially inner-city hospitals, really bear the brunt of trying to defray the effects of heat waves like this. And you might think that it's, your average person who doesn't have enough air conditioning in their house, they just want to cool off. And the waiting room is a cool place. So there's some of that. But I think mostly what it is people who have hot jobs. And we're talking about firemen who are putting out fires with all that equipment, people who work in bakeries and cooks and in kitchen areas. And these places, you know, there aren't heat regulations. So you could have temperatures of well above 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's supposedly okay. And so you end up with heat exhaustion after 4 or 5 or 6 days of heat wave. You end up with a lot of dehydration. So the number one way to keep people out of the emergency room from hot jobs or just because you don't have an air conditioner and you're elderly is hydration. Keep the fluid level up. And the number one way to know that you are becoming dehydrated, if you notice that your urine is turning a darker color. It could be because you ate beets and it's turning your urine red, but probably in hot weather, it's because you're not drinking enough. So if you have a hot shift kind of job, those jobs need to rotate people. Instead of working a normal 8-hour shift, you need to work shorter shifts or have longer breaks so that you can cool your body off, lots of cold drinks, and that'll keep you, hopefully, out of the emergency department. But heat strokes, I was once at a baseball game on a hot Sunday afternoon, and people were passing. They were carrying people out of that ballpark because it was 95 degrees in the broad sun. So if you're subject to that, don't go to a day baseball game. It's just too hot. In these hot weather.
I don't think people really, Gary, realize how important it is to stay hydrated. I think a lot of people do get dehydrated, but, you know, just drinking water occasionally, I think that's important. I don't think people realize how important that is.
Well, you know what people trust? They trust that their thirst will tell them when it's time to drink, and it may not always work to your advantage. It may be too late by the time you get thirsty.
Okay, topic number two, vegetation, good in protecting our lungs from ozone, but apparently in dry conditions, not sufficient enough, yeah?
Less so, yeah. Well, it's always been curious to me, why is there less asthma and better cardiovascular health in people who live in greener spaces? Even if you're in an inner city, but you're near, let's say, Central Park, if you take a lot of walks in Central Park, spend time there, because vegetation is a huge sponge for ozone. So when let me ask you guys this, because this is a question I often ask my audience. When do you think ozone levels are the worst on a hot summer day?
Dr. Mike, your turn.
Oh, they got to be late afternoon.
Yeah.
It starts going up at 10 a.m. as the sun gets stronger, peaks at about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then once the sun gets lower in the sky, the ozone is so reactive that it starts dropping as soon as the sun stops creating all that photochemical reactions. So by 5, 6 in the afternoon, like this time of the day, this is a much better time of the day to mow the lawn, because we have air quality alerts up and down the eastern seaboard this week from all the stagnant air, all the smog, and that's worth...
Could we shoot plants or plants into the air? Can they grow in the air, in the atmosphere, and help clean up things? In other words, as part of global warming decreases?
Maybe. That would be a very creative solution. I don't know quite how we'd engineer that. But what I learned this week is that plants, vegetation, they sponge it up. They take up to about 20% of the ozone out of the air unless there's a drought. So what we could do is try to keep the vegetation and the plants as hydrated, as watered as possible, because when they're well watered, they open their stomata to the atmosphere, and that's when they suck up a lot of ozone. But if they're in drought conditions, they shut down, they don't suck up the ozone, and the conditions are much worse for us. So hot, dry, stagnant air is the worst possible scenario. You don't want to be out in the middle of the day jogging or mowing the lawn or doing yard work, because that's when the ozone is the worst. But if it's rained recently, you're probably better off.
And the ozone problem is worse in the summer, not so much a problem in winter months?
Not at all. No. Yeah, ozone levels are generally pretty low in the winter months because it's all dependent on the intensity of the sunlight.
Okay, there's a debate over BPA-free plastic, Gary. Give us the details.
Yeah. All right, well, as a toxicologist, I called the Eastman Chemical Company a number of years ago when they started advertising BPA-free plastic in terms of their hard, clear plastic to replace the polycarbonate to make BPA-free water bottles. And I called them and I said, well, you guys are making something called Triton, which is now the BPA-free plastic that's going into all these water bottles. How do we know that it's not reaching something else that's endocrine disruptive? And I got a lot of hand-waving and no clear answer, and no, they wouldn't send me any data. Well, it turns out that after enough toxicologists and enough people asked them, they paid for a study that showed that it didn't reach anything. And then they published that study in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, but they didn't put the acknowledgement in the study. You know, so the Triton, Eastman, Kodak didn't acknowledge the fact that they paid for the study. So everybody thought that this was a kosher, on the up and up, you know, neutral, no bias kind of study. But the whole thing was paid for by the chemical company making the plastic. And then recently there was an expose done. A couple of other competitors of theirs tested their plastic water bottles and found endocrine disruptive chemicals leaching out. Now there's a lawsuit about who's right and who's wrong, but it just goes to show a couple of things. Number one, drinking water out of plastic always is probably going to leach something. Number two, that if you don't have clear disclosure in a publication, you're always suspicious of what are they covering up. They didn't want to acknowledge that they were paying for this endocrine study of their own plastic, and it has lots of, that raised lots of red flags.
Okay, give us, in a minute, give us more on this study about earthquakes and quakes in fracking wells in about 60 seconds.
Yeah, well, there have been an increasing frequency of earthquakes, not huge ones, but 3 to 5 on the Richter scale in the Midwest, places like Texas and Oklahoma and into Kansas, where a lot of fracking for natural gas has been going on, a couple in Pennsylvania. And so everybody thought, well, it's these deep injection wells where they're putting all this fluid in the ground, putting pressure on the bedrock that's causing the fracking. Now we're learning, this new geologic study, that this is actually a pass-by effect. When there's a huge trembler, a huge earthquake somewhere else in the world, that shock wave travels through the Earth's crust, eventually, maybe 6 months later, gets to Texas, and where all these fracking veins have been created, it sets off a tremor there that actually turns into a 3 or 5 on the Richter scale. So this is sort of a sympathetic tremor that's coming from months before, from another part in the world. We're opening up these veins down into the Earth that are natural fault lines for new earthquakes.
All right, we'll have to talk more about that sometime soon. That's our weekly toxicologist, Dr. Gary Ginsberg. Go to his website, whatstoxic.com. Toxic things, even non-toxic things. You might be surprised at what you'll see on the website. Coming up, it's Straight Talk from the Docs, another fantastic segment with Dr. Mike Roizen and Dr. Arthur Perry as we roll on here on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.